field, turns for home.
They're at the top of the stretch.
Top of the stretch.
They're into the stretch.
And here they come into the final furlong.
Final furlong.
Final furlong.
Into the final furlong.
They go inside the final furlong.
This is the final furlong on HRRN Live.
HRRN Live.
It's Trainer Talk Wednesday. Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone, and welcome to this Wednesday night edition of Trainer Talk here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, you know him, the Pontiff of the Pick Four. We do welcome everybody just joining us across the country on Sirius Channel 93. And for those of you who have been with us on XM 209 over the course of the past 3 hours, listening to our live race coverage from Belmont Park with Jude and Chad Summers, welcome back to the program here tonight. And Jude, somewhat of a milestone show for us in a couple of different ways. We have our very first husband and wife trainer duo together with us. And not only that, they are in studio with us, our first trainers ever to appear on this show in studio with us here in Lexington, Kentucky. So going to be fun. Philip and Vicki Oliver, our special guests on Trainer Talk for the full hour tonight.
Yeah, we should have brought some booze in here to medicate them, because most of the trainers are drinking cocktails and on their cell phone. Every once in a while, we hear a kid run in the room or something. They don't get out of here.
Yeah, especially at this time. I mean, they've been up since, 4 o'clock in the morning, maybe even earlier. And I don't know, Philip, what time do you start your day?
About 4 o'clock.
Yeah. Vicki, you too? 4?
Yeah. Well, you get to the barn about 4:30 every day, so.
Oof.
Who gets up first? Really.
Me.
Of course.
Oh, stupid question.
You don't make your wife coffee in the morning or anything? No.
Very unlikely.
What you do is you make it the night before, set the timer on it so it's ready when you get up.
Pretty much gas station.
Do you ever hit snooze?
Several times.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
Yes. Vicky? I do once or twice, but his might be 10 or 11 times.
Wow. Just not a morning person, huh?
After 20, 30 years, you get used. I'm sure you're still getting up pretty early.
I am. I'm usually up about 4:30 every morning. It's just in my blood. I did it for so long that, you know, I just wake up automatically. I have great clock genes, evidently.
Apparently.
Well, let me throw out a couple of numbers, as we typically like to do when we introduce our trainers here on Trainer Talk. And Philip, you might not like this too much, but the combined win total from Philip and Vicki Oliver is 290 career victories. Now, 150 of those are Vicky's. Philip, only 140.
She started training before me.
So a couple of years before me. You're catching up rapidly, is that what you're saying?
Not as quickly as I'd like.
Well, this show very much about you and your background and how you got started, some of the people that helped each of you along the way and helped you get to this point here in your career. So let's do that. Let's go back to the beginning. And Vicki, let's start with you, ladies first. Take us through your background and how you got started and became interested in horse racing, first of all.
Well, my family's always been in horse racing, but I used to do show horses my whole life when I was younger. And when I started to get out of college, I realized that the show horses weren't really where you could make a lot of money. It was kind of more of a hobby, more, you know. So I decided to go out and do a bunch of different things in the racing industry. I worked for a blacksmith, a vet. I worked in the racing office, worked in the publicity office, tried to see all different avenues, was an assistant to Elliot Walden, exercise rider to a few people. So tried to do it all before I went on my own and realized this is kind of what I wanted to do.
And of course, your dad, prominent in this game. They've been well documented, obviously. G. Watts Humphrey. Talk a little bit about that and growing up with G. Watts Humphrey as your dad. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, he's a great, great guy. He's been such a great supporter of everything I've decided to do. He supported me when I did the show horses. Wasn't really going to probably follow through with it as I got older, because it's an expensive hobby and not a whole lot come out of it. But when I decided to go on the horse racing, I think he was very excited, and I think he really was behind me the whole way. And, you know, back then, I don't think there was quite very many female trainers. So, you know, starting off that way, you were wondering if it was the right choice. But it seems more and more, there's more and more female trainers the more years I've been in the business. So, and he's been a very big supporter of me.
What year was that?
99 was my first year. 98. Because we got married in 99. So it was a year before I think we got married. My first runner was in, I believe, 98 of April as a two-year-old, which is funny. I've been many April two-year-olds.
Yeah, it's not really your style.
Yeah, but my first year training, I guess it was.
Well, yeah, you got to do what.
That's all
the
I
bills,
had.
Right? Yeah, start them out, get them going.
Who was that horse?
It was a Carson City filly named. Ooh, why am I drawing a blank on?
Good filly.
Yeah, Carson City filly. Yeah, she was a very nice filly. I can't believe I'm. I can't remember her name.
I can't remember. I'll think of it in a second.
Yeah.
You're not alone. It's amazing how many trainers forget that.
I know. I shouldn't. If I walk out this door, I'd be like, oh, gosh. You know, I should remember that.
I put her on the spot.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
She's like, thanks. Yeah.
I trained so few winners. You know, I remember every one.
Oh, this one didn't win. This
she was fourth, but she drew the 12 hole, which was such a bummer coming out of that.
Wait a minute, you can remember the post position.
Yes.
Remember the weather.
Carson City.
You get the pedigree, the post. Names are irrelevant.
That's right. And she was the 12.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. And you mentioned working for Elliot Walden.
Yes.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, I worked for King Ranch. I broke babies under Bill Harrigan. And then that winter, I went to go exercise ride for Elliot Walden at Payson. And then when I came back up in the spring, Elliot let me have a string here at Keeneland. And then I went to Saratoga with him. Then I had a string at Turfway with him. And then I broke my collarbone. And that's kind of when Phil was worked for Elliot, and that's how I met him. And he kind of went back down to two assistants in the winter. So there wasn't really a whole lot for me to do down at Payson. We'd been kind of stepping all over each other. So that's when I went to Gulfstream Park and worked for Bobby Umphrey in the racing office.
So it was a broken collarbone that brought you two together?
Yeah, well, I actually met him. But yeah, I guess it was, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Well, I think it was a broken collarbone that took you, was why you left Elliot.
Yeah, no, I think I knew him before that. I worked for Elliot in the fall, the fall before that. At Keeneland, actually, with the broken collarbone, that's when you came in from Chicago.
Yeah, and then I think you broke your collarbone. We all went down to Pace, and you went to work at Gulfstream.
Yeah, at Gulfstream Park.
So it was love at first sight.
But my first year at...
Yeah, so she just kept going.
Hey, wait, she avoided that question.
Yeah, she completely dodged that question. My first year.
Apparently not. At least for me it was, but yeah.
But I think my first year I was, I galloped for Elliot just for the winter, and then I went, that's when I did all the stuff in the summertime. But I did know Phil, I worked under Phil my first year as an exercise rider with Elliot, and then he went to Chicago and I went up here with Elliot. And then we didn't get together until the following year and got married in 99. You're glad they asked me the year we got married first, not you.
You remember the day?
Yeah. Very good.
One of the few dates.
Wow, you just put him on the spot with that on national radio. That's impressive. I was a 99 year as well with my wife, and she's always hitting me up with the date, and I hate when she does it. Of course, I now have it etched in my memory. Yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah. After about 5 years, you learn.
Yeah. The first 5 years were rough. Yeah.
What about you, Philip? How did you get your passion for the game?
Kind of a similar story, but in that my parents were in. My father was a show jumper, and my mother was a 3-day event rider and then trainer. And I kind of grew up doing the same thing. And was a decent rider, but probably not good enough to really do well at the top level. So I started during the summers when I was at school. I'd go and ride out for a guy called Stan Miller, who was a champion jump trainer in England and in Lambourne. And I did that for 2 or 3 years and just kind of got the feel that I liked riding race horses a little bit more than show horses. And probably in the beginning thought I wanted to be maybe a jump jock. I was going to be too heavy to be a flat jock. And then I got too big to be a jump jock, so I ended up going to the English National Stud, actually, and doing a course there. It's a pretty big course in England, and there's only 12 people get picked every year to do it, and met a lot of It was the actually the inaugural course. It hadn't been run for about maybe 20 years, and it was the first course back, and there were 12 of us on it, and funnily enough, a lot of us have ended up over here in America, but decided I didn't really want to be in a stud side of it, so I went and worked for Lester Piggott for a couple of years, and then I got offered a job over here for Ian Jury, who you knew in California, and actually when I first met you, working for Ian.
Right.
And then worked for Ian for about 2 years, and then I worked for Bruce Headley for 3 years, and then I came to Kentucky, decided I liked it over here, and worked for Elliot for, I guess it was about 4 years maybe, and then went out on my own.
I didn't realize you had that strong of a jump race background. It's we hear that story from a lot of trainers that start on that side and then come over to the flat side after that. It's kind of neat.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, you don't really get to see a lot of it over here, but it's a great sport and a lot of fun. I mean, and great horses over the years. I mean,
yeah.
But I mean, that's where I really started. I mean, other than the show side of it, but I really like the jumping side of it.
Do you still follow it closely?
Not as close as I'd like to. You know, once you've been over here, you kind of forget about it a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, Saratoga is really the only meet that...
We used to have the odd jump race at Keeneland, but and it's a different level over here compared to at home. It's you know, a lot more of it for one, and a lot better quality probably.
So talk about the dynamic being a husband wife trainer team. I mentioned you're the first husband and wife team to ever come on the Trainer Talk show here, and tell us about that and what it's like, you know, living with each other, being in the same game. Obviously you're competitors on some levels, but I know you're working together on other levels too, so talk about that.
I think we have a unique relationship that we can do this. I mean, I think there's a lot of people that might not be able to do it, but we seem to get along very well. And you know, we agree on a lot of things. What's his and what's my horses, we make our ultimate final decisions, but all together, we're all together. You know, it's all one team. But I think when the final call is made of which horse goes where, it'll be his decision or it'll be mine. But it is a little bit of a bummer. I do wish we could run under just one name. It would be, you know, whether it would be Oliver Racing Stable, but you just can't.
That's
do
what
that.
We were hoping for originally. When we started, it would be able to run under a stable name, but you can't do that. Unfortunately, because there's been a couple of Keeneland meets where we'd have sort of ended up second in the standings, but because we were split, we were sort of fifth and sixth or something like that. And,
right.
That's an interesting concept. And you remember Dan Edson that used to be Eddie Gregson's assistant, mm-hmm. and was a racing secretary at Golden Gate. We talked about that many, many years ago, about being able to set up your business that way so that you could actually have a life. You know, his concern was, you know, he liked to do some traveling. He liked to, you know, do things on the weekends and stuff. And of course I did too, not single-minded like guys in the Hall of Fame. And so, you know, we talked about that, setting up an operation where, you know, one guy could take off for 2 weeks if he wanted to and go to Tahiti or whatever he wanted to do, and then the other one come back. And I don't see why you can't do that, really. I mean,
I think a lot of it's that absolute trainer rule where...
But you could suspend both guys if you, you know... Guys and gals. I'm not saying it should be men.
No.
But my father had a woman trainer in the 50s, by the way. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, I go back with women a long way. But she was the only gal to have stalls at Santa Anita at that time. And when I got married the first time, my wife actually had to have a trainer's wife badge so she could be on the backside after 6 p.m. And that was in 1980. Wow. So that's at Santa Anita, you still had to have one of those. Craziness.
Have you ever had any thoughts of, I don't know, kind of combining forces, so to speak, and having one of you take the role of like the assistant trainer and just, you know, do it all under one banner as Oliver Racing, so to speak?
Not really. I mean, we've done it so long under both names now that, you know, it really doesn't matter. I mean, I think it'd be hard to do now.
I think too, the original theory behind it for us too is I was mostly private for my father, and Philip was going to be the public trainer of, you know, that was kind of the idea to get out there, that he takes in a lot of outside clients and I kept in. I didn't think we wanted everyone to think that we were only private just for my father, mm-hmm. where Phil could be public and get outside clients and I could stay with him. That's kind of was the idea of keeping it the two separate.
Sure.
When and we did decide to go that way.
Doing that, I mean, it's still a lot of people think we're private for the two clients we've got. Ian Banwell, which is St. George Farm, and Mr. Humphrey, her father. I mean, a lot of people think we're private for them, and we've had other clients over the years, but I think a lot of people think we're just strictly for those two.
Yeah, talk about working for your dad. I worked with my dad for many years, and the thing I always advise people is don't work with family, because we were maybe too similar. We would always butt heads on several occasions, but you know, at the end of the day, we were all looking for one goal.
Right.
Talk about working with your dad or for your dad and training for him.
He's amazing. He's the greatest person to work for. Takes the ups great, like everyone, and takes the downs great, unlike a lot of people, you know. So I think he understands the business. He rode horses. He's been running horses his whole life. So he understands when things go wrong, a horse get hurt, or horse doesn't run well. He's superb. You couldn't ask for a better person to work for than him, because he's just the most understanding and never, you know, never plays the red board and never takes blame to anyone, just, you know, keeps going forward. I think he's done it long enough where he knows that that's the way the business is. You know, he just doesn't look to blame ever. He always just says, well, that's what it is and let's go on.
Yeah,
you know? He really is. He's a very positive man. I mean, you know, I mean, you can have a Billy going the right way and something terrible happened, and you know, he just always looking forward. I mean, he's never looking back or second guessing anybody. He's really good like that.
You have another dynamic in that relationship with Rusty Arnold, who's your dad's, if I dare say, primary trainer,
right?
So how does that work when you go to divvy up the horses? Does Rusty get his first pick and then you
no,
guys
he,
are, how
he's
does it
very fair. He's most of, you know, Rusty's obviously been training a lot longer and trained for my father a lot longer than I started with him. And most of the horses that kind of, he's tried to keep it separate, where when I, whatever I start off with, whatever makes it back to his broom van, I'll always get the horses out of the ones I trained. You know, a lot of the, Rusty's very good fillies. Obviously, he should get all the offspring. Some of the ones that kind of run down the middle of what they think, because originally when we went to Monmouth, that was kind of considered a less of a circuit than New York and Churchill, which Rusty's other string was here with Jack Bohannon. So he kind of divvied up where the B string, where that's where they would belong to run, would go to Monmouth my first, you know, 6-7 years. So it was actually quite easy for him to divide up. He always went to the sale and we always picked, you know, Rusty, you know, picked horses and we picked one, and it ended up working out great. And, you know, we're such good friends with Rusty and Sarah, where it's, we're all best friends, and it all works well. We all are on the same team and we go to the sales together and we'll sit down all together and say, who do you like the best? Who do you like the best? And it always ends up working out. People end up getting the horse they actually did like the best out of the sale. It always seems to work out well.
That's great.
Talking with Vicky and Philip Oliver in studio here on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You mentioned going to Monmouth. Where did that decision come from, and how was it made?
Well, originally, when I first worked for Elliott, I went to Arlington for 2 or 3 years. And the first year we went to Monmouth was the first year we actually started dating. And Elliott had told us we were going to Arlington, so we'd planned, got jobs. She'd got a job in the racing office there. I was working for Elliott. And then, you know, as trainers do, changed his mind about 2 weeks before, and we went to Monmouth, and which we weren't happy about at the time, but when we went there, we ended up loving it. And I worked for Elliott, for 2 years whilst we were there.
I think so, yeah. Because I was in the publicity office the first year, and the second year was my first year training.
First year training. So maybe I worked 3 years for Elliott there, and Vicky trained 2 years. And then when I started out on my own, it was just kind of a natural transition to go there, and we did. We'd go to Monmouth and then come back for the Keeneland Fall. Go from Keeneland, well, we'd do the Churchill meet and then go down Payson, Payson back to Keeneland in spring. And that was kind of our circuit for About 10 years, yeah, probably. 10 years. Until about 3 years ago, I think. 3 years ago, we started just staying in Lexington year-round and just going down to Payson for the winters.
Okay.
But loved it. I mean, we were there 10 years and really enjoyed it.
And working with Elliot, I'm sure you had a chance to be around some pretty nice horses. He had it rolling for a while. Who were some of the names that you're always going to remember when you were working with Elliot?
Menifee.
Yeah. She says it with a smile. Right?
Well, Menifee was...
Distorted Humor.
Yeah, we had Distorted Humor, Victory Gallop, Menifee, True Luck.
I wasn't around Victory Gallop. Phil was around Victory Gallop a little more than I was. Cause that's when I went on my own, I think.
Yeah. But Vicky used to gallop Menifee, and I mean that was a fun year. I mean, because we had him at Monmouth. I mean, you know, he was a $42,000 Harlan colt, kind of big roguish thing, and you know, not a second string horse, but at that time, you know, he kind of fit Monmouth better than Churchill and Saratoga. Sure. So he ended up with us, and Vicky rode him all the time, and when he broke his maiden, quite a lot of money.
Yeah, why'd you kind of light up when you said Menifee? Yeah, that was the first thing that came to mind. How come?
I just thought he was a really neat horse. You know, he just was a special horse. He was big, strong. He just was a lovely horse to be around, and really enjoyed working with him. And you know, he was just fun. And like Phil said, we had him right from the beginning of his 2-year-old year. We came up there as a 2-year-old and stayed there all the way till I guess he went to Churchill in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got to get back on him at Payson, which was nice. When I was training on my own, I had my own, and then I'd be able to ride him. I used to make a deal with Elliot where I'd get on 3 of his horses if I could borrow his rider for 3, because I only had 6 babies.
Sure.
So they had to go in company, so I'd get on 3, and then I'd borrow a rider for 3. So I got to stay on him for a couple months that winter, and then I didn't, after about January, when he came down, I stayed on my side.
He was unlucky not to win the Derby, if you ever go back and watch that one. I mean, had a troubled trip.
Yeah, he was a very talented horse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like the fact that you made that deal, you know, and I always had a lot of girls working for me because I think they have an affinity for the animals.
That.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember I had the couch.
Yeah.
I had the box of tampons in my bottom desk drawer. I mean, you know, they'd all come in. I'd hear about their boyfriends, their husbands, all their bad relationships. I'd give marital advice.
Is that why Philip was all hanging around your barn?
Partially. I used to have a lot of guys coming in and out of the office because the girls would always come and visit me. You know, I had a couple girls that used to go to San Diego State that worked for me during the summers at Del Mar, and they called me the bee without a stinger. You always have these girls around here, but you don't date any of them. I said, no, I'm married. I'm not doing that. I'm just, you know, but yeah, I had a lot
the
of them.
Bee that would come without a stinger.
Yeah. But
let's go back to that. Maybe not.
Let's forget it. The girls, I mean, you loved that horse. And that's what I liked about having girls get on my horses is they loved them. I mean, the guys, they'd come in, they'd get on them. They got 5 more to get on. They'd be in and out, you know, and they didn't really seem to. I mean, so sometimes they had a horse that they liked or whatever. And I had Jerry Quinn, you may know him. He trains a few horses, Irish guy. He actually had an affinity for some horses and really enjoyed getting on them. But he had been galloping for John Sullivan,
He's
who had a lot of dinks.
Yeah.
So he liked getting on mine. But anyway, you know, girls have that affinity with the horses. And talk about that. Talk about how you...
I think it's, too, I think probably a lot of girls that are in the business that ride are probably once rode when they were young, and we're horse lovers and animal lovers, where you just get... And especially with, I guess, when I used to do the show horses, you'd get so attached to your horse, and if you had one or two, you kind of miss that in the racing when you kind of get on 8 or 9 a day, and you don't get that close connection because you're not around them as much as you'd like. So when you find one that you have a good connection with, it's fun to have, you know, that you're very close with, and... You kind of try to pick some of the ones you really fall in love with, and you obviously like them all, but there's some you like more than others.
Yeah, sometimes girls get really particular about it. I had an exercise girl, like if she had a sick day, or don't let anybody else get on this horse.
Oh yeah.
You know, what are we gonna do with them?
That's the only problem with having too many girls in a barn.
Well, you can only have one at a time.
Yeah.
There can only be one queen. That's it's like a beehive. Yeah. Back to the bees.
Bee thing. Yeah.
What is it with you and bees? No stingers.
No stingers.
Philip, I was a huge fan of Victory Gallop. I thought he was such a cool horse. How was he to be around?
He was really easy, actually. I mean, Elliot, we got him from a lady in Maryland. I forget her name. But Elliot bought him for, I think it was through the Thoroughgraph guy and Preston Wood. And I mean, he came in and he was just an easy horse to be around from day one. I mean, easy to gallop. Very playful type of horse. I mean, but not in a bad way, just a good feeling horse. And I mean, really just pretty simple to train.
Yeah.
I mean, Payson Park's a funny track. It's a very deep track. And I remember Bailey coming up to Breeze and he went, I mean, back then, you know, Cigar was working in 104 going 5/8. That was a good work. And this horse went 101 out in 13 and 4, something like that. I mean, it was, you know, Payson's got a lot quicker the last few years, but I mean, back then that was something you never saw.
Yeah.
That was kind of when everyone got really excited about him.
You guys do an exceptional job with turf horses. And that's something that a lot of people have problems with. I mean, I know some of the guys that train for my brothers, they don't even like turf racing. What's involved with the turf horses, and why do you think you excel at that?
I guess we're not ones that, you know, well, some of the pedigree we get is usually two turns or, you know, classic distance horses, and we've had owners that do like having two turns or grass horses. But I guess it's just I don't know if it's your training style where you don't get them lickety split out the gates in the beginning, or you kind of work on keeping them easy, calm, and learn to, you know, break off easy and finish a work, you know, real strong, which I think probably you want for a turf horse, where maybe it just adheres more to turf, or, you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess we prefer the two turn horses.
Seems like we do better with poly or synthetic and turf horses, and I don't really know why.
Does that go back to your jump racing background?
Maybe.
Or
I'm just bad with sprinters.
All right, we're going to continue this visit with trainers Vicky and Philip Oliver in studio in Lexington, Kentucky, here on Trainer Talk. But first, we do have to get to a commercial break. We're back in 3 minutes with the second half of Trainer Talk. Stay tuned here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Breathing easy is the key to equine performance and health. That's why horsemen around the world count on Flair nasal strips to protect the lungs of their equine athletes without drugs. Flair strips gentle support of the nasal passages reduces the soft tissue collapse that occurs in all horses during intensive exercise. 7 clinical studies prove the benefits of Flair strips for reducing lung bleeding, reducing fatigue, and shortening recovery time. Reduce bleeding, recover faster, perform better. Prevent, protect, perform with Flair strips. Attention horsemen, are you getting the most out of your equine athlete? All natural EPO equine could be the answer. EPO equine is the most potent blood builder on the market. Top trainers like Scott Lake and Steve Margolis are reporting dramatic improvements in their horses. Easy to use and clinically tested, EPO equine is the product your horses need for speed, strength, and stamina right out of the gate. Call 215-501-6880 or visit epoequine.com.
RaceHorseReport.com.
What is it?
What is it?
What is it?
What is it, baby?
International racing, weekend stakes recaps, always free selections, great stories, workout information, racing news, handicapping tips, spot plays, and more.
It's as marvelous and as simple as that.
Join thousands of other thoroughbred racing fans by going to RaceHorseReport.com. Make RaceHorseReport.com your number one source for thoroughbred racing information.
That's great.
RaceHorseReport.com.
This is Daily Racing Form's Dan Ullman with some big news about DRF bets. Thousands of players like you have already made the switch to DRF bets, and now there's an even bigger reason for you to join. Free DRF PPs. That's right, for the first time ever, get free Daily Racing Form PPs when you wager with DRF bets. These are the DRF past performances you know and love, and DRF bets is the only place you can get them free. So why wager anywhere else? With DRF bets, you'll get the best sign-up bonus in the business, free guides and analysis from DRF's top handicappers, breaking news, analysis, and wagering on the go control with DRF and DRF Bets Mobile, one-click multi-ticket wagers with DRF Ticketmaker, and now free daily racing form PPs. Only one place gives you the PPs you prefer when you wager, DRF Bets. Join today and wager with the most trusted name in racing. And if you sign up right now, you'll get a $125 cash bonus. Find out more at drf.com/bets. That's drf.com/bets.
Want to know what we're up to?
Yeah.
Then log on to horseracingradio.net.
It appears that the website has become alive.
Horseracingradio.net is your official home for HRRN on the web. Read our blogs, download our podcasts, link up to our Twitter and Facebook pages, listen to live streaming of all of our broadcasts, and much more. HRRN is your home for racing's biggest events, and our home on the web is horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
It's Trainer Talk Wednesday on the Final Furlong on HRRN Live.
Mike Pena, Jude Feld, back with you on this Trainer Talk edition of the Final Furlong Show here on HRRN. We do remind you, you can join us tomorrow and Friday afternoon, 3 to 7 Eastern Time, our HRN live coverage from 3 to 6. Of course, on Thursday afternoons from 6 to 7, this show becomes the BristNet.com call-in show presented by Twin Spires, your chance to call in and talk racing with us here on HRN. And then on Friday, our Express Bet Weekend Stakes preview from 6 to 7. Saturday morning, our Equine Forum show. And Jude, no live racing for us coming up this weekend. Hard to believe.
I know. It's like the first day off we've had in a long, long time. Well, we're not off. We will actually be
here with the Equine Forum.
Equine Forum Saturday morning. But yeah, no afternoon shows, no night shows. So it was fun, though, last weekend. Right?
It was Churchill? It was a blast.
It was beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful night. Good races.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. All right, welcome back to the program here on HRN. You can visit horseracingradio.net for more information on that schedule and all of our Road to the Breeders' Cup shows, which are coming up later on this summer. We are visiting with Vicky and Philip Oliver in studio in Lexington. And Vicky, we talked to – well, actually, first of all, before I get into this, during the commercial break, we had a breakthrough here, which we started off the show talking about your very first horse that you ever saddled and ran in a race. And you couldn't remember the name. That name has come to you.
Yes, Pinta is her name.
Pinta. You never forget your first, see?
No.
Pinta.
Pinta.
Yeah. All right, cool. Were there other, you mentioned getting into the game as a female in a virtually a male-dominated sport. Were there other female trainers that you looked up to as you were growing up or other females in the business in any capacity that really?
I didn't really know any females in this business, to be honest with you. You know, when I did come racing, it was spectator. You know, I went and worked a couple of summers for a month or so with Joe Pierce at Monmouth, but I didn't really know any women in the business at all. So, you know, there were a lot in the horse show business, but I just didn't really know anyone in the racing business until I actually got in it. And
I mean, you wouldn't have really known anybody in general.
Yeah.
I mean, until you're involved for a
while. Yeah, until you get into racing.
Yeah, there, Kentucky, you're still a rarity. In Kentucky, really. I mean, it's gotten better recently.
Yeah, you have Helen Pitts, who trains. Becky Maker, who did train for a while. Joan Scott.
Yeah. But that, I mean, they're still relatively recent, you know.
Right.
To Kentucky. Because when I moved here 12 years ago, I think you were.
Yeah, it was one of the, yeah. It was a little awkward my first time stepping out on the track with my saddle towel. So I was like, oh, gosh.
Yeah, it's great. Like, you know, we had Kathy Walsh on here, which Philip knows. I don't know if you know Kathy or not, but she was a pioneer amongst female trainers, leading trainer everywhere that she went. Her father was the leading trainer in Washington for many years, and she took over his business when he got ill and won a bunch of races there. She was leading trainer in Canterbury. There were a couple other tracks that she has been to where she was leading trainer. So we had Linda Rice on, and Linda she'd heard her name, but she didn't know Kathy, but they're few and far between. I think really maybe Janine Sahadi was the one that really put a lot of gals thinking about getting into racing.
When I came to California, there was nobody. I think Janine was probably the first one out there that I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Because
at that time, I don't think Kathy had come down from Washington yet.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember, but I mean, Janine was the first one that I remember out there.
Outside of your family and Elliot Walden, who we talked about earlier on the show, who are some of the other people that kind of helped you guys along the way?
I mean, I didn't really work for my freelance firm, but I thought Roger Atfield was, I learned a lot from him just being around him and around his horses. I thought he was very interesting and it was amazing. I mean, I freelance for a couple months and getting on different horses. I'd get on a few for Elliot, a few for Rusty, a few for Roger. And just the difference, seeing the different ways people like them to gallop. It's like there's many roads to the winner's circle and everyone gets there. They just have different paths, you know? And it's interesting to see, I think.
Yeah, and then, I mean, I'd say I started off with Ian and I think Bruce Headley, I mean, you'd remember, I think he was a tremendous horseman, is a tremendous horseman. I mean, I think I learned more from him. I mean, I got a lot of good horses for him, Bertrando. I mean, he had a totally different way of training, but I mean, very effective.
Yeah, he's a fantastic breaker of 2-year-olds and in his backyard in Arcadia, he bought up all the houses around.
Yeah, he's got three houses in a row, and it's about 6 acres, and he has 50. Well, probably 100 roosters and about 20 babies getting broke back there.
The first time I ever saw 3 horses in the same stall, I was at Pomona. I had some babies at Pomona, and I went out there, and I'm watching Bruce's action, you know, like other trainers do. Yeah. They're always checking out the competition, and I'm looking in there, and he's got 3 horses with riders on in the same stall.
Going opposite ways.
Yeah, and they're bumping off one another and going absolutely berserk, right? And I'm just shaking my head. I'm going, what the heck is going on? So afterwards, after we were all done, I went over and I started talking to him. He says, my horses are never horse shy.
I mean,
I guess not.
They're the best broke horses on the track as well.
They really are.
He's just a tremendous horse.
Yeah.
What did you take away from him that you still incorporate into what you're doing today?
I'd say 90% of what I do is what I learned from him.
Wow.
I mean, he was so good and very patient. I mean, if horse gets hurt and you're told it needs 2 months or 3 months, he gives it 6 months. So I think that's what we try to do. The more time, the better. And I think it's paid off in a lot of circumstances for us.
You know, we talked about, of course, Vicky's dad, G. Watts Humphreys, and that relationship and, you know, you working for him and know each of you involved in that relationship. But you mentioned Ian Banwell, Philip. Talk about Ian and that relationship that you have with him and what he's meant to the operation.
I mean, he's great. He hasn't been in the business nearly as long. Probably a little longer than a lot of people think in different. He's had a few horses for maybe 15 years or so. And we got to meet him probably about 6 years ago and became pretty good friends and we got 2 or 3 horses at first and actually didn't do very good with them, but he sent us a few more and it gradually picked up. And, you know, the last 2 or 3 years, we've had quite a lot of success together. And again, his philosophy is he's more focused on the sort of classic distances, especially turf racing, which is good for us. And that's what he breeds for. And he's got, you know, he's had another nice horse, Mr. Commons, out in California with John Sherris, which has done very well. And, his focus is turf primarily, long on turf, the longer the better. He's had some horses with Gosden in England, and over the last 2-3 years, things have sort of come together for us, and we've had quite a bit of success for him.
What about some of the horses you've had that have been successful, in case any of our listeners aren't familiar with?
Well, we had Last Full Measure that won the Madison here in the spring. And then Mitty, who was third in the race at Churchill.
The Woodford
at Churchill. And prior to that, he'd won the Arlington part, the Arlington Washington, and set a track record for Ian. Closing range, he won the Proviante, the Grade 3 at Calder. And they'd be his best three horses so far as far as races won. And then there's Ben Cerruni, who's multiple stakes winner, who's owned with Mr. Humphrey, and a couple of others. We had a Abuela that Vicky had, which was co-owned.
Direct Line.
Direct Line, really nice. Won the Gardenia.
Tis Now Filly.
Who unfortunately had a Smart Strike filly, but there were complications with it. Bowling, and she didn't make it through that because she was a lovely filly. But there's been over in a pretty short period they've won quite a lot of races together.
Vicky, if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think I remember this correctly, but you trained a horse named Can't Find My Glasses.
Phil did.
Okay.
All right.
I was working in the racing office in horse ID with Barb Borden.
Oh, right.
At Keeneland. And this was, a dozen years ago now, maybe more. And you had come in with the foal papers, I think, for Can't Find My Glasses. And I commented on the name, thinking it was a clever name. And you looked at me and said, now his name is Can't Find My Testicles, because we just had him gelded. And that is one story of working in the horse ID office that I remember.
I've heard him tell that story on multiple occasions.
That was the day we ran him at
It was the greatest line ever.
And he jogged across the
water.
Might have
been the most embarrassing day.
Embarrassing day.
Yeah, Mr. Campbell. I mean, this one
you
was
weren't gelded.
It was true. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that bad. But we thought this horse was okay because he'd run second in his start before that, but he was theatrical and
breezed very well when we breeze him.
But calm. I mean, just, didn't want to. If you breezed him on his own, he'd breeze like a good horse. Somebody looked at him in the eye, he'd just check out. And we had, I think it was Craig Perez.
Yeah, it was.
And I mean, he looked like he was going to run good, and he was on the lead. Horse got up to him. When the went across the wire, he was by the quarter pole, and he jogged across the wire, and then he started bucking on the way home. So that's why he lost the testicles.
The ultimate equipment change.
Yeah.
What would you consider to be? I'm going to ask you to not be humble with this next answer, but your best training job to date, Philip?
I'd actually say Mitty, just because he's very difficult horse to train. I shouldn't take any of the credit because she rides him and he's dropped everybody that we've had work for us, and he's actually dropped her at pace, and it's probably my fault. But
yeah,
I was
that's
on the
nice.
Pony.
Put your wife on the crazy one.
When I'm mad at her. But most of the credit goes to her because she's turned him in from being very difficult into being very, not very easy to be around, but at least controllable.
Yeah.
But wouldn't be the best horse we've had, but I think we made a difference with him.
Now, I would bet that you probably asked to get on him.
It was actually circumstance of how I ended up on him, but it was last year, I guess, down at Payson, and we had gone through several riders with the horse. A lot of people just didn't, very scared of him. So I ended up inheriting him.
Yeah. I knew she was going to be there every day, so. Which isn't always the case.
And I just ended up falling in love with him. I thought, God, I wish I'd gotten him long ago. I didn't realize how special he really was, and very misunderstood horse, which I think that was the toughest thing, knowing that now, that I think he was just very misunderstood.
Yeah, talk about, because I always talk about the mental aspect, and I think a lot of trainers, don't pay a lot of attention to the mental aspect. Talk about that and how important it is.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think when he came into us, he had fractured his splint bone being broke, so he lost his whole kind of breaking process. When we got him in, we had sent him to Kesmark and swam him, and he didn't really have any company when he came in, so everything was very shocking to him, and his always immediate instinct was to stop and wheel. And that's
full gallop.
Just at a full gallop. Ooh. Going to Breezy, wow. Just drop and wheel and drop the rider and do it every day. And just over time, and when I first started to get to know him, I started to pony him with one of the riders. And I had said to Phil, I was like, you know, I don't think he's nasty. I don't think he does any of it to be mean. I think it's all like defense mechanism. And then when I started riding him, that's just when I realized I don't think he does it to hurt you, or I don't think he was being common. I think a lot of it was just like, I'm scared and I got to leave this situation. And that's kind of how we got to know him and got to figure out the best way for him to go. And Keeneland's brilliant for him because it's quiet, which is so nice. And so is Payson.
Do you take him out for like trail rides? Ooh. Or how do you? No.
all in a control. He's got with one routine. That's it. We don't vary anything.
Yeah, because he's at Gelding, and Ian had said, do you think when he retires, he could be a riding horse for me? We're like, no. Could be your pet.
But before he won the Washington Park Handicap, there were a bunch of people up in the stand at Keeneland, and Del Hancock was one of them. And Vicky was on another horse. This was before she was galloping him, and had Jock on him. You know, Vicky.
No,
was
I was galloping him, but I was the rabbit for
him. Oh yeah, well, not that day.
Yeah.
So Vicky's going over, and she's on the rabbit. Jock's behind. Hear the siren go off. He's coming the wrong way. So we catch him, put the Jock back up, and breeze him anyway. And he breezed very well. And so anyway, he goes on the following week, wins the Washington Park Handicap, broke his track record. And Dell was like, that's not the horse that got loose. And because he breezed about 5/8 the wrong way. And I was so mad at him, I breezed him anyway.
Wow. How about if you had to pick the one or two horses, and this might not even be a fair question to narrow it down that much, but the horses that are always going to hold a special place in your heart when you guys hang it up someday, to this point, who are those horses going to be that you're never going to forget?
I mean, for me, it'd be, I mean, before I started training, it'd be Petrondo, mm-hmm. Best Pal, and probably Menifee, and Distorted Humor. I was pretty fond of him as well. And then since I started training, a horse called First Lieutenant, who none of you'd remember, but
I know the name.
He was a horse I really liked. And probably Mitty and the filly that won the Madison Last Full Measure, first grade one we won. So she'll always stick out.
Yeah, how cool was that?
It's unbelievable. What a day.
Yeah.
And then Rusty won the grade one right after.
Yeah, back to back. So we won the one, and then Center Court won the what was it, the, what's the name of that race?
The grade one. It was it was an awesome day. We were back to back wins, you know.
Yeah.
How about for you, Vicky? Who were those couple of horses that really stick out to you?
Menifee, for sure. Another filly named Abuela. It was a really nice filly that Ian and my father owns. She was just a really special filly, kind of like a Mitty, obviously, for sure. And First Lieutenant and Last Full Measure, too. I always rode Last Full Measure pretty much through her career, so that was fun, you know, being part of that. And one filly that was not, you know, didn't win a lot of races, but had a special place in my heart was a filly named My Friend Terry, who was a filly of Mr. Campbell's. It was a really neat filly that was crooked, you know, just one of those hard, trying fillies. You know, you got on her and was like, whoa, that's terrible. And then when she'd go fast, she'd feel really good and just always, always show up. She was a neat filly.
Yeah, sometimes you do your best training job with a horse that's not famous or not that good. But you know that what you did was really cool.
Yeah, right. You felt like you changed them or made them. Might not be a top horse or a really good horse, but you feel like you've made a difference in them.
Right.
You both mentioned First Lieutenant. What was it about First Lieutenant that was so special?
It's his first horse.
First of all, it was my first horse.
It was like a $76 mutual or something in there too, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was.
That's why I remember First
Lieutenant.
What's
that story?
He broke his maiden at Keeneland first time out, and then he ended up winning a few stakes, and he won the Salvador Mile at Monmouth and got taken down.
To third.
It was like our first graded stakes win, and I mean, he won by like five, but he just bowled his way through the quarter pole and knocked about six horses down. So, but he wasn't very big, and he was nasty and kicked her and bit her. And, I mean, he's a horrible little horse, really, but I loved him. But I really liked him.
He bit my wife. I'll never forget him.
Man, oh, man. You better sleep with one eye open,
Phil. Yeah. Maybe I should shut up.
So what is it that the Olivers like to do when you're not at the barn, you're not at the racetrack? What other things do you guys enjoy
We love
doing?
Hunting, shooting.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Hunting That's,
what? Dove, any bird, any game bird. Right. That is like a very big passion for both of ours. I think whenever we do retire, that's what we'll do.
Go around shooting.
Yeah. I think we really enjoy it. Love the dove season when it comes here. And we have 5 dogs, which we adore. Don't
what
have
kind
any
of
kids. Dog? Labs in a couple months.
That's enough.
Yeah. That's kind of, and I think we're really close to our family, our brothers and sisters. You don't get to see your brother and sister as much because they're over in England, but.
We're lucky. Rusty and we're very, very good friends with Rusty and Sarah Arnold. And Rusty hunts. You know, he's fanatical.
Yeah, he loves
as well,
it.
Which, you know, he plays golf. We don't play golf. You know, he doesn't work as hard as we do. So, he has a little more time for it. But we do a lot of hunting together, which is always fun.
That's the first time we've ever had any trainer. Or trainers say that they went hunting.
Except for Rusty.
Except for Rusty.
And Mott hunts as well.
Does he?
Uh-huh. Yeah, Mott's a big hunter.
Yeah, well, we never got to hunting with Mott. We didn't even get to cigar.
His career's a little more elaborate.
Well, actually, we had Mott the early years. We found out that he couldn't even get stalls at Centennial Park in Colorado. So we know things about Mott that nobody else knows.
He's got great stories. You know, we're all at Payson. He's got him and Roger, between those two, they can fill up a whole day's worth of stories.
Yeah, Roger, he is a very interesting guy to talk to.
He's lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was certainly a lot of fun. We had a chance to visit with him a couple of months ago. And by the way, if you did miss any of the Trainer Talk shows or any of this show, you can catch a podcast later on at horseracingradio.net and click on the Trainer Talk tab on the right-hand side of our homepage and go back and listen to all the shows at your leisure at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes.
That's right.
I didn't know that, actually. It's good to know.
Yeah, see, there you go. You can go back and listen to Rusty.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people put them on their iPods when they go jogging or whatever, but I don't jog.
I need something
obviously.
A little more upbeat.
Yeah, something motivational. Yeah. Rusty Arnold's not motivational.
So what does the future hold for Vicky and Philip Oliver and your operation? What can we look forward to?
I mean, I hope a lot more success to come like we had in the spring. I think with, St. Joe Ian and my father, I think they're really in for the long haul and look for having top fillies, which be fun to win the Oaks.
I mean, Ian's, both of them have very good breeding programs. Last Full Measure's getting bred to Frankel next year, which, it'll be kind of fun to have one of those.
Ooh, yeah.
It's going to be 3 years before I see it, but
it's all right.
But he's got a very good solid program, and Vicky's dad's got a solid program, so we're just hoping we get one or two really nice ones every year and can do well with them.
Yeah, and you think back to even going back further than your dad, I mean, the family, the generations that have been involved with horse racing, it goes back a ways, doesn't it?
Yeah, my Aunt Pammy, who was very passionate about it. And my grandmother was partnerships with my father. They all were very much into racing. So it'd be fun if, he could get some fun races. And I think he's got.
Don't forget your mom.
And my mom.
She bred a Derby winner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was there some genuine risk in the pedigree
there? Don't want to matter.
Oh yeah, that horse. Couldn't remember his name.
Don't forget that one.
Her name.
Yeah, you never forget that. Her name, Genuine Risk. Yeah, you never forget that, would you? So many great horses that have been part of that family tree.
Yeah.
Just amazing. Amazing.
Well, I think Rusty trains the, I don't know how many generations it's been of the whole Clear Mandate, Dream Deal line. It's,
I think it's 6
generations. Likely Exchange. I mean, he's had all those generations, which is really cool.
I mean, Deal just won that stake at Indiana. I think he's sixth generation out of that family.
Yeah, which is pretty fun.
That's one of the fascinating things I learned today about your dad's operation and how he gives the horses to the trainers who train the mom. That's fantastic. I love that idea. Wish more people would do things like that.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
I think you get a little bit of an edge when you know what you know. Yeah. You see a lot of similarities, I think, when you get a foal out of you know, the mother you trained. It's amazing.
Sometimes good qualities.
Sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes they're slow, just like that mom.
You know, one thing that's neat listening to each of you tell your stories and talk is that it's got to be cool to have each other, you know, at the end of the day, and to come home and have somebody to talk to about what's going on in your individual operations.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it'd be very difficult to be able to go home and have a completely separate life and not be able to talk about what goes on during the day. I would find it very hard.
I think it's if you're married to a non-race tracker, I think that'd be probably easier in some ways, but I think really difficult. I mean, just the hours we keep and, I mean, just, you know what it's like.
Oh, yeah. No, I think there's no comparison if you're in racing to be married to somebody that's in racing or has an appreciation for racing.
You know? And some of the things, the stories you could tell them, they wouldn't believe that it would actually happen. They weren't there.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a big edge, and I think you guys are fortunate because it's nice to be able to sound off one another and understand when you had a bad day, what the other person's going through. I mean, you know, we can't be clowns all the time, you know, and a lot of people think that all you do when you're a trainer is go out and shoot the breeze on the rail and drink coffee in the morning, and it really... You do that, but it's not. That's
yeah.
Not
there's the, more in there that eats you alive than they think.
That's not the hard part of the business.
She doesn't do much of that.
Well, she's out there galloping those crazy horses of yours.
Don't realize how tough it is for me to watch that.
Getting bit, getting kicked. Yeah.
There's Philip with the rosary beads out there.
That's why I'm bold.
Well, guys, it's been an amazing visit over the course of this hour. And again, folks can go back, listen to a podcast on our website if you did miss any of this interview. But Vicky, I want to thank you very much for being here. Philip, great stuff. And can't thank you both for taking the time to do this with us here tonight.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, great stuff. Vicky and Philip Oliver, and all the best moving forward, too, with the stable.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. A lot of fun, JT, as always.
Yeah, it was a great show. Glad I thought of it.
Yeah, all right, here. You're an absolute genius. What do we do to top this one next week?
I don't know. I got
to
drink more.
Yeah, drink a little bit of rum and then come up with another idea for next week, will you?
That's right.
We'll come up with something. It'll be fun. And, of course, you can catch this show every single Wednesday night from 6 to 7 Eastern time right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And, by the way, before we do let Vicky and Philip formally go, I want to remind you that you will each receive gifts from a couple of our sponsors here of the show, Flair Equine Nasal Strips and EPO Equine. So they'll be sending those your way as well. And I think you told me that you use some of those products too.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
Right,
thank
you. Yeah, we'll pass them along and get those to you. All right. Well, coming up tomorrow, 3 to 7 Eastern time, our live race coverage from 3 to 6. This segment will be the call-in show from 6 to 7 Eastern, Bristnet.com call-in show presented by Twin Spires. It'll be your chance to call in, talk some racing with us as we do every Thursday night. And then on Friday, we're back from 3 to 7 Eastern time, and our Express Bet Weekend Stakes Preview is the 6 to 7 hour on Fridays, and you can tune in and see who we like in all the big races. And I think I might have some bragging rights again this week.
Yeah, I think you do.
How about that?
Miracle of miracles.
2 weeks in a row.
I know.
That's unbelievable.
I've got to turn my handicapping card.
I might lose my moniker as the mush.
Yeah.
If I keep picking all these winners.
I know. Keep it up.
I actually bet on that one this week, too. I didn't bet on the one
the
week before.
I was shocked. I saw you rooting. Yeah. And I wondered, why are you rooting for this horse? I didn't know you were making a big score.
Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah. Nicely done.
Yeah. Thank you. That's it. That's all I got.
That's all I got.
All right. Of course, Saturday morning, our Equine Forum show as well. You can see a complete broadcast schedule, horseracingradio.net, and follow us all the way down the road to the Kentucky Derby or Breeders' Cup, wherever the heck we're going next. Breeders' Cup World Championships. We'll be there as your official radio home November 1st and 2nd. We'll be on site with 20 hours of Breeders' Cup coverage leading up to the big event. So circle that on your calendar and follow us for all the major prep races as we take you to Calder, Saratoga, Arlington. We'll be at Monmouth. Going to be a lot of fun. Busy summer.
Might even get to Del Mar if we're lucky.
Ooh, maybe so. Stay tuned for that. All right, check it out, horseracingradio.net. Our thanks to Vicky and Philip Oliver for joining us in studio tonight on Trainer Talk. For our producer, Lee Delapina, Jude Feld the Pontiff, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you tomorrow on HRN.
Good night, Barbados.